So I'd like to thank the organizers for kindly inviting me. It's a great meeting, and I'm only sad that I can't stay until the very end. The focus of my talk will be the pseudo-gap critical point at low temperatures. And in particular, towards the end, I'll present some recent specific heat data. That will be the highlight of the talk. And I'd like to mention and thank the Moore Foundation who's supporting this particular project. So the emphasis will be the t equals zero axis here, and in particular, in the absence of superconductivity. So the game we've been playing for many years now is to apply large magnetic fields to suppress superconductivity, and then look at the nature of the state at t equals zero, the underlying ground state, from the right here going into the pseudo-gap phase, crossing what we call P star, the pseudo-gap critical point. So I'll be interested in phenomena just to the left and just to the right, but not, I won't discuss at all this charge ordered phase that occurs at a distinctly lower critical point. The material I'll be focusing on mostly is LSCO with either neodymium or europium substitution, as these, when you do these substitution, you suppress TC down to about 20K maximum TC, which means that with a relatively low magnetic field, you can suppress completely superconductivity and go down to close to T equals zero in the normal state. This is resistivity data taken just above and just below the critical point. So just above at 24%, what you see is a completely linear resistivity going down to low temperatures. And however, if you just go down by 2%, from 24 to 22, you see the upturn, a huge upturn in the resistivity showing up below a characteristic temperature, say about 50 Kelvin at this doping, which indeed is the pseudo-gap temperature. So the pseudo-gap phase is to the left of this, and is the signature of the pseudo-gap phase is this upturn in resistivity. It occurs at below critical point, 0.23. And the quantum, what I call quantum criticality is the phenomena associated with this linear T resistivity above the critical point. So the way we know that this is the pseudo-gap phase boundary is from ARPES data by Johan Chang. And Johan is here, and so he can talk to you about this. He's performed ARPES data at the various dopings here, in particular up to 24%, where he sees no antinodal pseudo-gap at this point. And going down to 20%, you see a large antinodal pseudo-gap and at lower dopings as well. If you study the temperature dependence of this antinodal gap, you see that as you increase temperature, it closes at 75 Kelvin or so. And that's the square here. So it closes very much where the upturn stops, or if you like, upon cooling, the upturn in resistivity starts when this gap opens. So this is really the pseudo-gap phase we're looking at. I'd like to point out that if you plot the resistivity upturn as a function of resistivity versus log T, you see very clearly that these upturns are saturating at low temperatures. So this is not an insulating behavior. And the same is true of LSCO. In fact, this is data taken in pulse fields now. If you don't go too low in doping, when you eventually get localization, you see that the upturn is very similar and it saturates at low temperature. So this is a metal to metal crossover and not a metal to insulator crossover. Let me first mention a thermal conductivity study by our group on neodymium LSCO with crystals provided by Jian Shizhu. And so the idea is to measure on the same samples the thermal conductivity instead of the electrical conductivity. So if I take those same two samples I just showed you, I can measure their thermal conductivity using the same contacts, and this is what I get. So this is thermal conductivity divided by temperature versus temperature at very low temperatures. This is millikelvin, Dill-Fridge data going down to 80 millikelvin or so. So what you find, say, starting with this sample here, is that it has a high conductivity, and this value is in exact agreement with the Wiedemann-Franz law. So if you convert this rho zero using the usual universal constant, you get precisely this value. So we confirm the Wiedemann-Franz law just above the quantum critical point. If you now go to this slightly lower doping with a six-fold increase in resistivity, you get a six-fold decrease in the conductivity, and you again satisfy the Wiedemann-Franz law. So this is another very nice way to prove that this is not an insulator. This upturn leads you to a completely metallic state with a well-defined conductivity that obeys the Wiedemann-Franz law, down to the very lowest temperatures. It's then interesting, this was done in a normal state when you suppress superconductivity. It's interesting to do the same measurement in the superconducting state in zero field. And this is the data here. So this is just inside the superconducting state. So as you know, D-wave superconductors have nodal quasi-particles. These conduct heat. They give a residual linear term. And in particular, in samples that are in the dirty limit, like these ones, in essence, the value you get is a substantial fraction of the normal state. So for example, in this sample whose normal state value is 1.2, in the superconducting state you get 0.8. So there's not much of a difference actually. Increase the field, you suppress superconductivity, you get a slight increase. The point I want to make here, however, is that this large six-fold drop in conductivity due to the pseudogap is clearly visible even in zero field inside the superconducting state. So that tells us two things. It tells us that the field doesn't do anything particular. So the stuff I'm going to talk to you about taken in field is not a field-induced effect. None of this is field-induced. It's just revealed by suppressing superconductivity. The pseudogap is there in zero field. The other thing is that the location of the critical point at 23% does not move, whether you're in a normal state or in the superconducting state, at least in this particular material. It could move in other material, but not in this one, presumably because superconductivity is already very weak. So we can plot the conductivity in the normal state or in the superconducting state at five different dopings as we cross into the pseudogap phase, and you see this large drop down to values that can be, you know, eight times lower, either in the normal state or in the superconducting state. So the P star position drawn by this line doesn't move, doesn't shift, whether you have superconductivity or not. Okay, so the resistivity upturns we can study in detail as we change the doping across the critical point. And so you go from this purely linear yellow curve to a very slight upturn and into more pronounced upturns as you decrease the doping. To shed light on the origin of this upturn, you know, what is the cause of this metal-to-metal crossover, we've performed Hall effect measurements. And so what you see clearly from the Hall data is that you're going from a value, which is what you expect for a large Hall-like Fermi surface, to an increasing value of the Hall number at low temperature. And this happens at temperatures below T star. The pale lines here are in 16 Tesla, and the darker ones are in 33 Tesla. And what you can see is that the field has no effect in changing the value. It just allows you to go down lower in temperature. And finally, these dots here are field sweeps up to 37 Tesla, taken in Nijmegen. So we can go down to 1.5K and really measure the T equals zero value of the Hall number. And there's no field dependence. So let me plot now the Hall number, which is the inverse of RH, as a function of doping, and that's what you get. So that's one of the main figures of the talk, is that it shows us a new signature of the pseudogap phase at T equals zero. It shows us the signature of the pseudogap phase, or pseudogap critical point, is a drop in the Hall number from 1 plus P to P. And this happens rather abruptly. And this is raw data. There's absolutely no, there's nothing. This is straight out of the experiment. So there's no, this is a tetragonal system, single layer, there's no change. T equals zero data, no magnetic field dependence. It could not be simpler and more straightforward. You go from 1 plus P to P. So there's a tremendous loss of carrier density as you cross into the pseudogap phase, a factor of 6. By comparison, our earlier data on YBCO published here shows a very similar dependence. Here it's slightly more difficult to extract this because we can't go to T equals zero and there's issues of chains and so on, but basically you can see it's extremely similar. So we believe this is the universal signature of the pseudo-gap critical point. Okay. Interesting to compare this with a K-space picture obtained from STM in Seamus Davis's group. What they've shown for many years is that on the below P star, you have an arc that ends mysteriously on the antiferromagnetic zone boundary. They persistently get this result. If they go to higher doping, above 19%, they see the reconnected large Hall-like Fermi surface. So they also see, in fact, from their QPI, a transition from P to 1 plus P. And it seems to be organized around a K-space line, which is the antiferromagnetic zone boundary for whatever reason. So just to put this into perspective, this is the kind of thing that you would get if you did have long-range antiferromagnetic order, Nail order. You know, the large Hall-like Fermi surface would be folded around this line, and you would get a Hall-like Fermi surface, nodal Hall-like Fermi surface. You would go from 1 plus P to P carriers, and the Hall effect calculated in this paper, you know, agrees perfectly with what we observe. Now, I'm not saying that this is what's happening, but this is certainly a nice theoretical model within which to think of what might be happening. By the way, the size of the upturn can also be understood roughly in terms of a transition from 1 plus P to P, in the sense that at 20%, this is 6, and this is a factor 6 increase. At 13.6%, this is 8, and this is an 8-fold increase. So roughly speaking, the magnitude of the resistivity upturn seems to just scale with the number of carriers. If you lose 1 plus P to P carriers, you can roughly get the magnitude of the upturn that you should expect. Okay, let's turn to specific heat and thermodynamics. This is a busy plot here of existing data with references here. So what I'm showing is C over T, or gamma if you like, the electronic specific heat across the full doping range of Hall-Dope coupe rates with three different materials. So just to walk you through this, let me start by this point here. This is, above 27%, there's no superconductivity. So this is just low temperature, normal state, Fermi liquid, specific heat. This point is from this paper by Kamran and Nigel Hussey, where they measure the specific heat of an overdoped LSCO sample. So they get 7 in those units. And slightly lower doping, roughly 30%, an early measurement on thallium-201, quite a different system, coupe rate, got the same value, so same specific heat. This is nicely confirmed by the open symbol here. Open symbol means quantum oscillations. Nice quantum oscillations by Nigel Hussey and Cyril Post give you a mass, and you can convert that mass into a specific heat, and that works very nicely.
Excuse me, something yeah. is not clear here. This is C over T versus P.
Yep.
At what T?
Essentially, T equals 0. T equals 0.
T equals 0.
Yeah.
Very low temperature.
That's right, very low temperature. This is the residual gamma, if you like. So that's directly the residual gamma for those overdoped non-superconducting coupe rates. Now, on the low doping side, the symbols here are taken from Ranshaw et al., this nice paper where they plot the mass of YBCO, so the cyclotron mass from quantum oscillations for YBCO on this side. So this is also normal state low temperature data. Now, to go between those two, you need to suppress superconductivity in YBCO and thallium and LSCO. This is very difficult. So what is shown actually is data by Lorem and Talon where they just use the size of the specific heat jump at TC and equate that with a residual gamma. I mean, the two are related for sure. So this is a different scale. Actually, the numbers are the same here. But basically, what the point of this is that by measuring the increase in the size of this jump, you get a sense of how large the residual gamma must be. And they've emphasized over the years that there's a rapid and large drop of the density of states below P star. I mean, that's in some sense a defining signature of the pseudo-gap phase. These numbers match quite well, actually, with the measured quantum oscillations. And so the point I'm trying to make is that there has to be a peak in this data somewhere, because this is a 10-fold increase here. Okay, and the mass here is definitely just about 3 times this mass. So this has to go up and then come down again. And this, indeed, the data does show that, but it, from the specific heat jump, it's not so clear. You know, you could get broadening effects and so on. So bottom line is that we wanted to redo this by direct measurement, by going down to low temperature and just suppressing superconductivity. And this is what we've done with neodymium LSCO and europium LSCO. So the question of great interest here is what exactly is going on this right side of P star? And one of the things we do know is going on is the linear T resistivity. And this has been attributed to quantum criticality, although not really theoretically understood. This is a nice study by Nigel Hussey and Cyril Post, where they say beautiful linear T resistivity at 23% LSCO. And this is a map of the power law for various dopings and temperature. And so it's very linear here, and it continues to be linear at low temperatures, as shown here, say, at 23%. Okay, so you can plot the magnitude of the linear term and see that it goes down gradually and goes to zero at the end of the superconducting dome. So by the time you get out here, you get T squared resistivity. Okay. So I'll come back to that, but let me point out that all up until now, linear T resistivity at low temperature had only been really seen in LSCO-based materials, largely because it's hard to suppress superconductivity. But recently with Cyril Post in Toulouse, we've been able to see that in bismuth 2212. So this is a phase diagram taken out of a paper by Vishik et al. In Ziyech Shen's group, where they collected all sorts of evidence for T-star. And so we decided to go above all existing evidence and be sure we're above P-star. And so that's 23% in this material. And by measuring resistivity here, up to about 60 Tesla or 58 Tesla, you see that a temperature evolution, so this is a resistivity versus field, you can just plot the evolution in temperature, and the raw data gives you a nice linear temperature dependence. And in fact, it's very, very similar, and there's no scaling of the axes here. It's very, very similar to what we see at the similar doping in neodymium LSCO. So this is just telling us that, in fact, this linear T resistivity is really a universal property of cuprate, not just LSCO. You can go to a very different bilayer system, high TC, and still get the same linear T behavior with consistent slopes, actually. So we can add this point now here on this evolution, including many different cuprates, actually. So there's something very deep and universal about the linear T resistivity. And now what we want is to shed light from a thermodynamic point of view on this quantum criticality. So this brings me to the last piece of experiment I'd like to show you. This is the result of a long study by my student Bastien Michon, co-supervised in Grenoble by Thierry Klein and working with Christophe Marcenat, who's a real expert on low temperature specific heat measurements. And we studied samples provided by 3 different groups. And so the measurements were done on 5 samples of europium LSCO and 9 samples of neodymium LSCO. These two are basically identical as far as their properties are concerned. And so let me show you the results. So the phase diagram of those two systems, right, the T-star line is the same, basically. This is just Nernst and resistivity, but all of our measurements show that these two have essentially identical phase diagram, in particular the same P-star value. So here's the raw data, C over T versus T at low temperatures for europium LSCO crystal at 24%, so just above P star. Okay, so in 0 field, you get the red curve, and in 8 Tesla, you get the blue curve. And 8 Tesla is enough to suppress superconductivity in that sample whose TC is just 10, 11 Kelvin here. So way on the overdope side, 10 Kelvin TC, you see, by just taking the difference between these raw curves, you get a nice specific heat jump, conserves entropy. This is the magnetization curve, okay? So now we've done this for five different dopings. This is four of them. The 8% curve is close to the other one, so I didn't put it on there. But here's again, this is raw data. Absolutely nothing was done. And what you see is the following. You see three contributions to the specific key. One contribution is this T-squared dependence, this T-squared background, which is due to phonons. So C over T versus T, the T-cube phonon part shows up as a T-squared dependence. The other part you see at very low temperatures, below 1K, is a very rapid nuclear Schottky contribution. And finally, the one that we're interested in is the third one. It's the electronic part, which gives you the fact that there's differences between these different curves. The beauty, actually, of this raw data is that you can just subtract this curve from this curve or this curve from this curve. You can use the blue curve as your reference and just subtract it off, and you get rid of everything except the electronic part. And that's shown over here. So using the blue curve as a reference, we get by construction, when we take the difference, just this line. So the fact the number 3 here is obtained by just the T-squared fit above 2K gives you 3 here. And then this green curve is just the difference between these two, difference and difference. So the red line in particular at 24 is literally just this curve minus the blue plus 3. And what it brought out straight out without any analysis is a beautiful log T dependence. So this is plotted as C over T versus T. So this would be the main highlight of the talk, is that we've seen for the first time in a cuprate a C over T going as log T dependence down to 0.5 Kelvin, very, very low temperature. So this is essentially thermodynamic proof that there has to be an energy going to zero at that point, and therefore it allows us to call this critical point a quantum critical point. Of course, in that sample, you see linear T resistivity as well. So that was transport evidence, now this is thermodynamic evidence. Okay, so just to compare with something we know better, let me show you the thermodynamic evidence from a heavy fermion metal. This is, if you like, the archetype of a quantum critical system. Cerium copper 6 with some gold. This is the work of Lenhuysen, and as you put a bit of gold, you get a quantum critical point, antiferromagnetic, very well studied by neutrons, at point 1. And at point 1, you see linear T resistivity, and you see log T specifically. Okay. So these are the classic signatures of an antiferromagnetic quantum critical point. We now did a study with neodymium, and I won't show you all the data, but the neodymium agrees beautifully with the europium. Same, just different set of samples, but you get the same quantitative agreement as I'll show you. And so the full study contains 14 different samples, and it's all summarized here. So what this is C, the electronic C over T, measured at 3 different temperatures, so 0.5, 2, and 10 Kelvin, for those two materials. So squares are for europium, like this point here is this point here. Circles is for neodymium. And we've added published data on LSCO. I've already mentioned the Nakamae data here, but also there's low doping data. This is non-superconducting, this is non-superconducting from this reference. 5 minutes, thank you. So if you take a cut at 0.5 Kelvin, our base temperature, you get the red data, very sharp peak. If you take a cut at 2 Kelvin, still get a peak, slightly lower. If you get a cut at 10 Kelvin, still get a peak, but less sharp. By the way, these purple dots here are from powders. So this is from Bruce Golin's group in Canada. So 36 and 40%. These are non-superconducting samples. So this is it. This is gamma plotted across the full scale for a cuprate. It agrees very well with published data on LSCO. And what obviously strikes you is a huge peak right at that point. This is thermodynamics. There's a lot of specific heat in there. And this is the signature of a quantum critical point. So let me discuss the two sides. So first, on the left here, the fact that this drops like a bomb by, an order of magnitude, is of course something that was very well known from Talon and Lorem. Right? And it is the drop in specific heat that, you know, is the signature of the pseudogap phase, if you like. It's interesting to compare two measurements now done on the same samples of specific heat on the one hand, so density of states, and carrier density on the other from the Hall effect. What you see actually is that the Hall effect is an even more rapid, it's a larger effect than the loss of density of states. So you have a factor 2 drop in density of states when you have a factor 5 or 6 drop in carrier density. So in some sense, if you like, the drop in carrier density is even more of a defining signature. What about above P star? Now, what is the origin of this rise? Well, it must be an enhancement of the mass associated with this critical point. And this is now very reminiscent of the Pnictide superconductors, where you know well the work of Matsuda and Shibauchi and Carrington, where they studied in detail the evolution of the linear T resistivity up here at the critical point going over to T squared. So that's one similarity. But in particular, Tony Carrington measured the jump in the specific heat, just as Lorem did, as you approach the critical point, and saw this great increase in mass, measured also directly from the quantum oscillations and in agreement with. And so telling you that you're getting this log T divergence, divergence of the mass. And that's very reminiscent of what we're seeing here now. Okay, so I would say that these are two, the log T and the peak, are two classic thermodynamic signatures of quantum criticality, and we see them now here at the pseudogap critical point of the cuprate. You might ask, well, is this just this particular cuprate, or how generic is that? There's no full study like ours yet on other cuprates, but if I go back to what I put together at the beginning, the similarities are very striking, you know, in terms of magnitude, in terms of, I mean, this is unadjusted raw data, so even the actual magnitudes are comparable. So there is a less direct, but I would say pretty strong case that there's a similar peak in YBCO or thallium. And of course, there's no log T that has been directly accessed so far in something like YBCO, but I would say that this shows this is strong evidence for a universality in this feature. So in summary, I've mentioned three signatures of the pseudogap critical point: the drop in carrier density seen at least in those two materials, the linear T resistivity very well characterized by Nigel Hussey, and this peak in the specific heat with a log T dependence down to the lowest temperatures at the critical point. And all of this is really what we've come to learn is the classic, you know, it is an antifermionic quantum critical point. I mean, this is what has been seen both in heavy fermions or in Pnictides. This is what happens at an antifermionic quantum critical point. So the question is, what is going on in cuprates? What is the nature of the quantum critical point that's giving you signatures that are so similar to an antiferromagnetic critical point? Because if you look at, that's it. So that's my last slide. If you look at YBCO, there is magnetism down here, but there's no sign of magnetism extending to that point. So there's some, that's where the mystery would lie, I would say, that it looks like antiferromagnetism, but there's no clear evidence of solid long-range antiferromagnetic order at the critical point. So either it's a different quantum critical point, or it's just short-range magnetism that is sufficient to do it. But these are now the questions that we're asking ourselves. Thank you very much.
May I say that I've been looking for this T log T specific heat.
I bet, yes.
The cuprates since 1989. You see, if a resistivity is proportional to T, then the minimum singularity you expect in the C over T is log T under certain conditions. So it's wonderful that you could do this thing at low enough temperatures. Dimitri.
Uh, I would like to go back to Wittmann France. So you said that it is satisfied in the limit T to zero.
Yep.
What about finite temperature? Is it below the universal value, above, or still equal?
Yeah, it's hard to address because phonons dominate the conductivity at finite temperature.
So
we don't know. We can't tell, right?
Was it chi-xx or, sorry, yes, kappa-xx or kappa-xy?
This was kappa-xx, that's right. This was kappa-xx. So we did one study with kappa-xy on YBCO, but this was in the charged density wave region, not near the quantum critical point. And there we found that it was satisfied at T equals zero, but at clear deviations, of course, at finite temperature. Yeah.
And what happens to rho xx above 80 Kelvin?
Sorry?
What happens to the resistivity above 80 Kelvin? Because the data was from helium to 80.
It keeps going up.
Up to?
But the linear resistivity does not extend much above 80 K. Actually, there's an end to the linear Q regime, around 80 Kelvin, I would say.
Yeah, Louis, pretty practical question. Right, so a remarkable, fairly remarkable aspect of Kuprecht is that you distinguish when you're up to fairly high temperatures, while you're looking at low temperatures.
Yeah.
Lorentz and Kelvin did these studies of these specific heats, right? At way higher temperatures, it's very, very hard, right? Because you have to subtract problems, etc. What would be your guess? Would you think that would be possible to see this logarithm in this specific heat extending to
higher temperature?
Yeah.
So the measure, as far as we could go with the measurement, was 10 Kelvin, just because the phonons become huge, right? However, I should point out that the Seebeck coefficient, S over T, also shows a log T dependence at the same doping at 24%. And that extends up to about 80 or 100 Kelvin, which is roughly where the linear T extends, in fact. So in terms of the range of what I would call the low temperature quantum criticality, it's below roughly 80 or 100 Kelvin at that point.
All agree, relatively restricted, it's just linear up to 2000.
No, that's incorrect,
one
actually.
Linear is good enough.
Yeah, that's incorrect. That's incorrect.
Not at this doping.
Not at this doping. There's one doping at which this happens. It seems to be a coincidence between the high T slope and the low T slope. But at those at the critical point, at the pseudocap critical point, the linear T resistivity ends at about 80 K. Yep.
No, in heavy kernels, of course, at quantum critical points, in copper 6 or say copper 3.5, you see this not true in specific heat. You see linear kernel resistivity, but there is one difference. There you see the T squared term diverging.
Yep.
And here you don't.
That's right. That's one of several differences. The other thing is that you put a magnetic field in a heavy fermion and immediately you move away from the magnetic quantum criticality. Here the magnetic field seems to do nothing.
Let me clarify the question. What diverges in the T squared? The coefficient of
the coefficient.
If T squared has to go to T, the coefficient of T squared has to diverge. Hmm? If you multiply it, that would be the solution by 100.
There's definitely a difference. Yeah, it does not behave in detail in the same way. I agree. Yeah.
You show the slopes, the gradient of slopes, and they were different. Is it true or?
The log T slope?
Yeah.
Oh, the log T slope only is only seen in one couplet, right? It's in or in two couplets, and the LSCO on your
group.
Yeah. Oh yeah, sure. Yeah.
Not for quantum critical behavior. You would expect that the slope will remain the same, but the argument of the local will accelerate if you are away from the
I see. So you're saying you're going from flat out here to log T here, but the way it would happen. I see, that's interesting.
I think what should really be happening is that at P equal to 0.21. There should be a lower temperature where it should get to a constant, and there should be a unique composition where it remains log T to the lowest temperature. So I think it's not inconsistent with, since your data stops here.
I see what you mean. Thanks, Andre. The Grünheisen ratio, remind me, is this is the gamma divided by?
You have to take the derivative with respect to P or with respect to volume, so all of these anomalies become begin to look sharper.
No, we didn't do that.
If you have the specific heat and the thermal expansion,
we don't have the thermal expansion.
To measuring the Grünheisen constant,
so you're suggesting we should measure thermal expansion, maybe? Yeah. John? Interesting.
So I was wondering, how does the nominal Van Hove singularity, that the chemical potential is passing through roughly in this region, impact things like C over T?
So let me show you. This, what John is alluding to is the question of whether, what is the role of the Van Hove singularity? Because around these dopings, there the band structure just changes. You know, the Fermi surface goes from hole-like to electron-like. And in fact, this was calculated for LSCO in this paper here. And this is the calculated curve for the known band structure of LSCO with the known dispersion.
But how can it be? There has to be a log divergence.
No, because it's not 2D.
It's a 3D. Oh, 3D.
Yeah, so that's the whole point. In perfectly 2D, you get a log divergence. But the minute you cut this off with a finite C-axis dispersion, and in fact, this dispersion is very large in YVCO. So basically, below about 300K, you no longer get the log T dependence.
What's involved in the calculation? I mean, is this?
It's just band structure. Just band structure with the known dispersion of the Fermi surface along the C direction.
Known dispersion in the LSCO?
Yeah.
But it won't get the right density of states at the Fermi level, then.
That's right. So I've adjusted here. I've just matched this. Probably it's going to be below that. You know, I'm just saying that this is the kind of increase you expect given the 3D dispersion. But I think a stronger argument is that this is going to cut off at low temperatures on this kind of scale. So there's no way that you're going to keep seeing a log T down to 0.5K from a band structure effect. That's the main argument, I think.
Purely for, because part of our job is educational, let me say that the reason for why in two-dimensional antiferromagnets the criticality has similar nature to that in cuprates has been given, but needs to be tested more thoroughly. But that reason is already found in the last 2 decades.
Yes.
Any further questions? Yeah.
So you've shown C over T and just a second, sorry. You had.
Right, yeah, I think you just put this up, actually. Yeah. It was.
Do you want to see this here? Or?
No, it was C over T and the hole simultaneously, I think. So what do I.
Sorry, I think I had it maybe before that.
I was confused what to take away from this because I was thinking on the overdoped side, I'm expecting C over T to be coming back down, I think, and you're expecting like...
Yes, so let me clarify. This data here is actually at 2K because the Hall effect was taken at 2K. So we wanted the data to be literally same temperature. And you can see at 2K, there's a little... These 3 points are these 3 points here. So this is a little bit... Yeah, you're definitely right. This is going to come back down, and this won't come back down. For sure. So we're just looking at the effect of opening a pseudo gap. How does that deplete the density of state, and how does it deplete the carry density? So it's really comparing to the left out here. On this side, the Hall effect just doesn't change, and the mass decreases. So this is where the mass enhancement comes in, at constant Fermi surface, if you like.
So just a very quick experimental question. For the carrier density, did you ever go to a little bit lower dopings to actually see if you can see the P line at, let's say, 0.15, 0.1, if it does follow this?
See the NH data?
Yes.
No, the problem is that it goes negative, right? So the minute you enter the CDW phase, this is completely different from Fermi surface. So we've done the measurements, of course, but it's negative, and so no longer has anything to do with the pseudogap phase per se. It's now the CDW phase with negative Hall and electron pocket and all that stuff.
Could we see your phase diagram that you had of
for
resistivity from your friend formerly from Bristol?
Formerly. It's there at the end.
Region.
Yeah, it's there at the end. Maybe I brought it as a summary at the end here. Yeah.
Would this not be kind of inconsistent with your specific heat measurement, provided that the same thing happens in everything?
Well, I don't think so, because what this says to me, anyway, is that there's some form of criticality up to about 0.27, 0.28, and so.
I specifically asked that because I've looked at this data in fair detail, and the conclusion was derived from extrapolation of the magnetoresistivity mm-hmm. H squared.
Yep.
And now there's some evidence, maybe Greg will present it, that it's really linear in in which case things may look quite different. And I'm saying that there has to be a relationship between the specific heat and the resistivity.
Oh yeah, I think issues of magnetoresistance are difficult, and one should look at these very carefully. But I think if you step back, the basic facts everybody agrees on, there is linear T resistivity. And there is T squared resistivity way out there. So how exactly you go from one to the other, maybe one can debate. But and the specific heat is the same. It is log T now at this critical point, and it's just flat when you go way above.
Further questions? Comments?
Actually, this is actually a general question. You know, we had two talks. Basically, you agree that something dramatic happens between 19% and 20%, 23%, but the previous speaker was saying that there is no Lipschitz transition, but you are saying that everything about transport is saying that you are going from a small transition to a big transition.
Yeah, I think,
yes,
let me clarify. The reference to Lipschitz was not about no change of Fermi surface. It was just about the location of the Van Hoek singularity. So no. We're also saying that, no?
No, I mean, yeah.
I thought that
there's
was.
It's a long-standing problem. You gave evidence of these partial Fermi surfaces from STM,
yeah.
Which is what all the STM see deep in the superconducting state. The ARPIS deep in the superconducting state sees a full Fermi surface and nothing happening at the antiferromagnetic zone boundary. There is simply a disagreement between...
Or the fact that you have to apply a sufficient field.
No, sorry. This is comparing STM in zero field with ARPIS in zero field on the same material.
Yeah.
Okay, it's a serious problem that needs to be confronted.
Right. So I guess the previous talk, maybe we can hear from the speaker, but he was seeing quite pronounced changes around 23%, 22%. And one of the ideas was that, in fact, say the electron phonon coupling was modified by a loss of carrier density. So this, in an indirect way, would agree with the large loss of carrier density that we're seeing in the Hall number.
Thank you very much.
Okay. Thank you.